Welcome back. It's Common Sense Ohio. Brett Johnson here with you. Norm at the table. Steve out in the real world doing some really good stuff somewhere. We know he is. He gave us a heads up. Can't be there, boys, on Wednesday. Take care. We said that's just fine. Just fine. Hey, great stuff happening in the show. A little teaser. Big news in Ohio, if you haven't paid attention, with the insurance companies, and we've got a special guest to talk about that. Nationally, lots of good stuff, including a little talk about Alcatraz. What else a little bit before we tease it into the commercial? What else?
Well, I'm wearing not today Antifa t-shirt. Let me explain. A few days ago, we celebrated, and that is not the right word, but we commemorated the tragedy at Kent State. And right now, Antifa is kind of burning down Seattle. And like, please don't bring the chaos to Ohio. Like, you know, if politicians and people want to have all that chaos out there, go ahead and have it. But in Ohio, that can, you know, people can, it can turn deadly when you bring in the police or the National Guard. Oh, yeah. And somebody makes a mistake and somebody says, hey, I heard a gun go off, and then they return fire. We don't need any of that. We don't need buildings burned down. You know, that's the point of this show, is let's just talk.
All right.
Let's work through things peacefully, and regardless of how upset people can get.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, let's get right into our sponsor, Harper CPA Plus. We'll see you on the other side.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.
I do want to make one more comment about the May 4th, you know, Kent State situation too.
Yeah.
It's fun that we
55 years ago.
You know, it's fun that Star Wars, the May the 4th be with you and that sort of thing. But sadly, the more focus on that, the less is on the Kent State.
Yeah.
You know, it's too bad, you know, honestly. Not that the Kent State situation, you know, shooting and killings and that sort of thing were front stage, but the more you put May the 4th be with you, it kind of starts to drown it down, and we forget about that history.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and it's Ohio history.
Yeah, right, exactly. Let's get right into why we have Marty Schladen from Ohio Capital Journal here. You did a fantastic story on, and we'll let you dig into it as well letting Norm kind of tee it up, this insurance situation in Ohio. You set it up.
Well, Marty's done a series of articles, actually, like going back
that's true.
A while. And Ohio has been involved in this. It's called pharmaceutical benefit manager situation for a long time. Talking to a couple of doctors that are pretty conversant with this, I guess back in the 70s, there was something passed by Congress called a safe harbor, where these PBMs kind of got created about the same time as a creature of this legislation, the safe harbor. And what it allowed them to do was, say the list price for a drug was $1,000, just to invent like a dosage, I don't know, for something very serious, let's say it's $1,000. The safe harbor aspect is that the drug manufacturer could work out a bulk price discount, or a rebate, if you want to call it that. But basically, it's buying in bulk and getting it at a lower price than list. And then that spread, that discount, could be not report, like not public, like in a safe harbor, that the PBM would not have to disclose that to the HMO or to the patient directly that they are charging for that drug. So it may be a list of, say, $1,000, but then because the HMO buys it, in bulk, it may only cost them $200. And then oddly enough, maybe the patient's copay is $300. And actually, in that case, right, the PBM makes money. So instead of it being a cost, it's actually a profit center for them because they're getting the copay, say, of $300 for something that costs them $200. And long way around the barn, back in 2018, a rather epic audit of this was done first in the nation by Ohio when Dave Yost was auditor, and found that I think the figure was something like they could not explain in the audit where $200 million of excess cost to the state of Ohio was coming from. And that's because of the safe harbor. It just was obfuscated.
Well, so I was with the Columbus Dispatch and I was on the public affairs team and we started covering this in 2018. And when you're talking about the safe harbor law, we learned all this. This was a long journey and we went on it with Yost. We kind of found a lot of things out together. The safe harbor has to do with their exemption from the federal anti-kickback statute. These pharmacy benefit managers work for insurers, any kind of payer, whether it be a private insurer, Medicaid, whatever. And they are the intermediary that handles drug transactions. They negotiate. First of all, they decide what drugs are covered by insurance. They control the formulary. And since at this point now, the three largest PBMs control 80% of the insured drug transactions in the United States, drug makers have a real strong incentive to want to be on that formulary. And not only do they control what drugs are covered, they control which ones get the most favorable treatment, which ones you don't have a copay for, which ones you have a big copay for. And that's their leverage when they go to the drug maker for a rebate. The thing that they have a safe harbor from a kickback about. And like you said, Norm, they're not transparent. And sometimes when you start going after rebates, they name them something else. They'll call them manufacturer's fees, this kind of stuff. But there's been research, you know, some specifically out of USC, that shows that in response to these ever larger rebates that the drug makers are making, they raise their list prices. That's the price if you're not lucky enough to have insurance. Your drug isn't covered, you have to pay. Wow. And they do that because that, you know, keeps their profits up so they can keep paying these big rebates. Now, the spread you're talking about is another thing altogether. The PBMs pay, they reconcile claims. They pay pharmacists for the drugs that they've already bought from wholesalers and dispensed. Mm-hmm. They also, because they control access to so many patients, pharmacies, especially independent small chains, they call them gun to the head contracts. If CVS, Caremark, Express Scripts, OptumRx comes to you and says, "These are the terms," you got to take them. You know, you can't you can't miss out on 30% of their business. And they have different contracts for Medicaid, for private, whatever. And often, what they require is that you take all of our contracts or none.
Wow.
But then, because this is also non-transparent, they engage in this practice called spread pricing, where, you know, Norm's Pharmacy, I pay you this much for a drug, but then I bill Medicaid or the insurer another amount. So at the Dispatch, I guess we were the first, maybe. I don't want to misremember the past. All this information is confidential. We got about 30 pharmacies around Ohio to cough up their confidential pricing data. I'm no good at data, so I got to just drive around the state and collect thumb drives. And, you know, my boss, Daryl Rowland, and Lucas Sullivan did data analysis and saw that they were charging a lot more. They were charging a lot more for the drugs than they were paying pharmacists. So then Yost did his audit, and he found all this other alarming stuff. So then the State Department of Medicaid went to the PBMs, and I don't think they knew how bad this was going to get for them. The Department of Medicaid got them to cough up all of the data for 2017. and turned it over to this consultancy group called Health Plan Data Solutions, and they analyzed it. And this was two pharmacy benefit managers served the five Medicaid managed care organizations, OptumRx and CVS Caremark. CVS Caremark had the vast bulk of the business. They found in 2017, those two PBMs charged the state almost $250 million more for drugs than what it paid the pharmacists who dispensed them.
So I said 200 million. It's actually 250 million.
What was, it depends on how you count it. It was 224 million between CVS Caremark and OptumRx, and I'm getting in the weeds here. But then this company called Centene, which is the biggest Medicaid managed care provider in the country, has had a couple of PBMs of its own, and they piggybacked onto the Caremark contracts. And it was just kind of this, they passed these transactions through these layers of PBMs, and that added another 20 million.
Wow.
And that was the thing, that was the basis of a story that forced Centene, because this pattern was found around the country. Centene, Yost sued them, and they settled the suit for $88 million in Ohio within 90 days, which you know is like no time at all.
Yeah. Wow.
And at the same time, they announced that they're setting aside $1.1 billion to pay off similar claims in 20-odd other states.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the situation you're talking about.
So in some of your reporting, Marty, I think I probably have the stats a little wrong, but basically your information is that the big chains also own these PBMs. Like I think in the article I read, something like there are 10 like massively large PBMs, and of those, three or four of them are owned by pharmaceutical chains. So they are negotiating, if you will, between themselves.
It's worse than that.
Okay, go ahead.
So there are three giant health conglomerates that are all in all Fortune 15 companies. United Health Group,
okay,
CVS Health, and Cigna Express Group.
So are these HMOs?
These
or
are
what are they?
They are much bigger than that. They're quote unquote vertically integrated.
Okay.
So
okay.
Each one owns a top 10 health insurer.
An HMO.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Cigna, United Health, okay. And Aetna.
Okay.
They also own, like, Optum, which is part of United Health, owns more physicians' practices than anybody else in the country.
Okay. So those are the prescribers.
Those are the prescribers.
Okay. The HMOs are the approvers.
They are the payers.
And they own the PBMs.
They own OptumRx, which is one of the top three PBMs.
Wow.
And they also own, you know, CVS owns the largest brick and mortar retail pharmacy chain, and CVS Caremark decides how much to reimburse them and all of CVS Pharmacy's competitors. The other two don't own brick and mortar, you know, traditional brick and mortar pharmacies, but they all own specialty drug mail order pharmacies.
And okay.
Specialty drugs are your real expensive drugs. Okay. You think about like cancer drugs mm-hmm. that cost $30,000 a month.
Right.
And they often set up deals where you can't get those cancer drugs at your cancer clinic. So even though those drugs are behind the counter, that dosage, hopefully you're fortunate enough to have never had cancer. So fortunate. But that dosage can be really complicated. A lot of it's hit and miss. You know, other treatments can't start until you get mm-hmm. that stuff right.
Yeah.
And you can't get the drugs from the clinic where your cancer doctor's down the hall and can talk to the pharmacist. You got to get it from this mail order pharmacy. Kathy Kandisky and I talked to people who had to wait weeks to get their cancer drugs. They couldn't start their chemo yet. Drugs came. The way they were filled was wrong. They had to wait, you know, like more weeks. We talked to two such people. Neither one is still alive. You can't say that that's what killed them. But,
yeah.
So
it wasn't helpful.
It wasn't.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
You can at least say that. Any week's delay is not helpful for anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially right. if you've got an aggressive cancer.
Correct.
You know.
And they
got
to try one, just like psychotropic drugs. sometimes right. a person who is, you know, having some kind of
depression problem.
Right. One drug won't work, yep. but they got to try them in succession. Mm-hmm. And I, what you're saying is cancer is kind of like that as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so the cancer clinics are very frustrated over this. The way that the PBMs and their parent companies react is, well, that's a profit center for them. And, well, that can be true, but it's a profit center for them as well.
Yeah.
And they act like this mail order service is this convenient, you know, this extra convenience for, you know, the patients. But Antonio Chacha, who is now a drug pricing analyst, the way he put it was, it's so convenient you have to force people to use it, you know.
Gotcha. Right. Yeah.
I remember when mail order was the thing. I mean, everybody was kind of getting into it, and you were forced so to do it. You really kind of were. With your insurance company, you have to use this mail order to
I'm
get
blown
your
away.
I remember that now, and that's kind of I don't sense that anymore per se. Maybe it just wasn't profitable to do. I don't know what the scenario is, but I remember that probably 10 15 years ago. Well, it was that way, maybe, yeah.
And wow. they're different, you know, different drugs. You know, if you've got a maintenance drug that, you know, it just shows up and it also can't be harmed by transit, which a lot of these drugs can be.
Can be, if they're refrigerated, maybe, or whatever.
Sure. And we've heard stories of that, you know, they show up on your doorstep and they sit in 100-degree weather.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, you get 90 days worth of pills and it shows up in your mailbox. Great. But that's something through this whole, you know, 7-year odyssey now, we've gotten to know a lot of Ohio pharmacists. And that's a service they independents just provide. You know, your poor old mom can't get out of the house anymore.
Yeah.
They just deliver her drugs to her doorstep free of charge. And those people are being forced out of business.
And I guess Amazon is now doing pharmaceutical deliveries.
I was just going to ask, how does that play into that? My mind went the exact same direction with Amazon. Is that in this whole realm, or is it a kind of an outlier?
Did they buy a pharmaceutical chain or something?
I don't really know about, I'm embarrassed to say.
No, that's fine. Okay. No.
I know it's a recent development, like in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
That they got into that.
Yeah.
And you know, Mark Cuban's into this game now too.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah. He started Cost Plus Pharmacy because that's how it's, I've spent a lot of time trying to explain how this all works, but it's huge. These are ginormous companies.
Yeah.
You need a whiteboard.
You do. And we, in fact, when I was at the dispatch, we spent a lot of time trying to come up with some sort of a diagram to show how all this works. We never could come up with one that
but
wasn't
where,
so
where
busy.
But where it really narrows, when you say three PBMs control 80% of the distribution, holy cow.
Yeah. It's not just
That is a choke point there.
Right.
That's monopoly stuff.
Real close.
Right.
Real close.
I mean, if you had three airlines that controlled 80% of airline service or three trucking companies or whatever, you know, that would definitely get the Department of Commerce looking in it as a as an antitrust monopoly situation.
Mm-hmm. And
especially when they own the entities that they're there. That they're supposedly at arm's length doing transactions with.
That's
exactly super dirty. So my understanding is one of the things Yost and these other 39 AGs are calling on Congress to resolve this. And one of the things is all the pharmacies, whether it's CVS's own brick and mortar chain or whether it's Norm's Drugs down in Logan, Ohio, right, that they all pay the same for that drug. I think that's one of the three reforms that they're asking for.
The biggest one is they're getting rid of one of these apparent conflicts. They're saying if you're going to be a PBM, you can't own a pharmacy.
Okay.
And Arkansas passed and signed a law to that effect.
Okay.
Nice.
It's surely going to get challenged in court because there's so much money involved. But that's what the 39 AGs, in my mind,
that's one of the things.
That's one of the things. And to me, that's the biggest thing.
And the other was, and maybe this feeds into Arkansas's legislation, that maybe if they exist, all they can charge is some kind of flat service fee.
Yes.
Like instead of getting any kind of rebate, it's just like you can get $5 for doing the handling of the paper.
Well, so that goes back to all this spread pricing stuff. The price in this world, the price is never the price.
No, they have these, it's never the price. Right?
They've got these lists. That's
what the doctors were telling me. Yeah. They were saying, you know, that list price. So what the PBM lobbyists will say, and I've read some quotes in your articles, they would say, oh, well, we're providing a huge service to the public because we're getting a rebate of, say, $800 off that $1,000. So that's allowing us to pass on a discount, you know, but that discount never seems to show up.
No, it doesn't, although usually it doesn't. It doesn't make its way to the customer.
To the retail user.
But the reason that you think, okay, we've got, and actually Trump floated this his first term and never did it, they're exempt from the anti-kickback statute.
Yeah.
Just stop doing that.
Yeah.
But there are reasons not to do that. In some of these government programs, it's a rule that some percentage of the rebate, and these definitions are magic here, be passed through to the government.
Okay.
And so then you get locked in. This is where these, you know, crazy government finance rules or politics comes into play. They're getting revenue out of this. And in Washington speak, this is a pay for. Let's say you want to, you know, Santa Claus to come to everybody's house. Well, you got to show you're paying for it somehow. Well, you've got this revenue and it's billions of dollars coming in the form of the government share of these rebates. Then it gets a lot harder to get rid of it, you know, for Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the reason I think nobody's ever just shut down this safe harbor anti-kickback, you know.
Yeah. So it seems to me, so something came out from the Ohio Medicaid agency, whose official name I can't.
Ohio Department of Medicaid.
Okay. There you go.
You're close. So surprisingly that simple, so considering it's a state agency.
Yeah. I came across a press release that they put out on April 25th, and they're saying, you know, obviously this project started in 2018 and that Yoast audit has been used by like the state of New York, the state of Connecticut, all the other states seized upon this really heavy duty work that both the press and Dave Yoast's office did to expose all of this. And it well, now you got 39 AGs. So obviously that's bipartisan. But they came out with a press release that said in the last biennial period, meaning 2 years, the state Medicaid office has saved $333 million because they are negotiating not with each patient's PBM in Medicaid, but they selected one PBM and they're doing a master contract for the entire state of Ohio's Medicaid plan based off of, I assume, negotiated transparency numbers, or at least as close as they can get the PBM to cough up. And I don't know which PBM it is, but they picked one PBM according to the press release. So that sounds like progress here in Ohio.
Oh, I think it definitely is. A couple of things. First of all, you know, back to Yoast. With the possible exception of Leslie Rutledge, who's the Arkansas Attorney General, and maybe not, because I think Yoast has been at this party longer. He has led all state attorneys general in the United States in this issue. And it's, you know, and that what that means is he's got political ambitions. He wants to be governor. Yeah. It means that he's taking on a big—
And it started when he was auditor Ohio.
Before
he became AG.
Yes. Okay. A big, big industry in doing it. I think he deserves credit for that.
Yeah.
Now, to the Ohio single PBM,
because they sure aren't. I'm sure they're. You know, their funds, their election, you know, funds. He's not getting a lot of money.
No.
From Big Pharma.
No.
If he was, he's PBM. Not anymore.
Right. You know, that money's probably going to Vivek.
Yeah, probably.
And probably not to Yoast.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He's taken a political hit.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. But for shows like this and articles like yours, that the general public is aware.
I don't know that they are either. It's kind of this arcane topic, but it goes to why your drugs are so expensive. And I think it's a political winner in the sense that it's bipartisan. There's like 39 attorneys general. And they're hearing about it from their constituents who take drugs. They're also hearing about it from independent and small chain pharmacies who are unfortunately, and now the big chains are going out of business and they're creating these.
I saw where Rite Aid declared bankruptcy yesterday.
And they
For the second time in 7 months.
Yeah. And so are any of those are any of those pharmacies going to survive? Are any Walgreens going to survive in underserved areas like southeastern Ohio? And these create real healthcare deserts, right?
Or Seattle. You know, like if you're in a city where they're burning stuff down and everything's got to go behind a locked chain screen, those inner city customers are getting mistreated because they're losing their neighborhood pharmacies.
Well, and they're losing them partly because, you know, they've got a high mix of Medicaid patients, that sort of thing.
And shoplifting and all kinds of issues.
Right. And they're also
shootings.
They're also just not making enough money on the front of the store because of online competition. But now to the Ohio single PBM, it goes beyond just picking one of the big three or the big six or whatever. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that.
Okay.
They, the way that the big PBMs sell themselves is like, you know, they're your bundled cable service. You're going to get a better deal if you get your cable, phone, and internet from the same company.
Okay.
You know? But, you know, as long as you don't look behind the curtain, you're getting a good deal, you know?
Yeah, right.
So what they did was they broke all that stuff down into constituent parts, and they hired some, you know, smaller PBM to handle one piece of that. And what that did was gave them that transparency you mentioned.
Okay.
It gave them visibility into what was going on.
So they're not using one of the big gorillas.
No.
Okay.
No, they fired all those guys.
Wow. Okay.
And then they also did, to help pharmacies, they increased dispensing fees. That's the fixed fee. Pharmacists will tell you they need $10 per script just to pay for the bottles, the labels, the overheads in their stores, that kind of stuff.
The labor, right?
They have
to hire a pharmaceutical assistant or somebody competent.
You got to have a pharmacist. That's a 6-year in school medical professional.
Yes,
you know.
Yeah.
You know, they don't work for free, but you also have to have a pharmacy technician.
You
got to have somebody to clean the place,
equipment,
you know?
And all that.
I mean, the Ohio Board of Pharmacy goes and inspects them, and that's another topic for another day, but they really rang up CVS for not being clean.
I remember that story. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
I remember that.
Yeah. So they've been able to, and I don't think anybody's totally happy on any side. I'm hearing from pharmacists that their dispensing fees are still too low, but they're a lot higher than what they were. And they saved, $100 million and made it more possible for some of these pharmacies to stay in business by just breaking the whole thing apart.
But so far, all that has been able to be accomplished is the Medicaid aspect.
Right.
The private insurance, I mean, that's still out there, and I guess that's why Yost and the 39 AGs, they're going beyond just Medicaid. They're going after the private insurance payouts as well.
The people I talk
to. Because that's got to be bigger.
The people I talk to say that this is the biggest single reform that's been proposed.
Wow.
Because you're breaking up the entire dynamic of the marketplace.
Yeah.
You're telling them you're ending an aspect of this vertical integration. You're saying, look, if you're going to decide how much pharmacies get paid, you can't own one of them.
Okay. Let me ask
which is logical.
Logical.
In looking at it as hindsight, should have never been allowed.
That's right. Yeah. It's breaking up the trust. That this is like Standard Oil and John Rockefeller.
Right.
I mean, this is the American way. You know, we believe in marketplace competition, but when you own the entire marketplace or close to it, that's not competition.
Right.
That's just straight off. That's just ripping people off.
So there's some stuff in the news I don't know if you know about, but
probably not.
No.
Well, the Federal Trade Commission is going after these PBMs several different ways.
Okay.
They've been investigating them. It's like a 640B investigation, I think is what it's called. Been doing that since 2022, and they've issued a couple of interim reports. saying that they appear to be gaming the market, hurting patients to pad their profits, you know, in illegal ways, and they're suing them over their practices in the insulin space. That they, you know, they got starting around 2012. The FTC says they started getting really aggressive, excluding cheaper cost insulins from coverage altogether in order to bolster their leverage to extract ever bigger rebates. Of course, and what the FTC says is that's not only helped the PBMs, that's also padded the profits of the three big pharma companies that make almost all of the insulin.
Yeah. And now the Ozempic and similar drugs that feed into the same population, many of the insulin patients, right, are now taking Ozempic and other things. And of course, the people want to, the side benefit has now become the main purpose, I guess, of weight loss.
Yeah.
You know, like it's being almost used off, what do they say, off label or whatever. Oh. Like it's, that wasn't the intention originally of Ozempic, but it's become that.
Yeah, they call those GLP-1 drugs.
Thank you.
And that's a whole new thing. And, you know, I mean, you know, that, it's not just people wanting to look better. They have all these other health conditions that come with obesity, but that's become a gold rush of its own.
Oh, my God, and, no question.
And the Board of Pharmacy. And, you know,
and it's an expensive drug, right?
So there are all these knockoff drugs being sold at these weight loss clinics. Mm-hmm. And the Board of Pharmacy has been pretty aggressive about shutting them down. And a couple weeks ago, Yost sent a letter to 14 of like a warning letter to them about.
Because it's not really efficacious like the original drug, I guess.
Well, and you got to have regulation, and that has to go through the Board of Pharmacy.
Okay.
And that's why, because they've summarily shut down like 10 of them.
Wow.
Because, you know, they're getting their drugs from other places.
Okay.
And so that's a whole other thing.
Because I know the alternative was go to compounding,
and well,
which has been helping.
A lot of compounding is going on in, which is less regulated by its nature. It has to be. But they're being completely unregulated.
Yeah.
Like one weight loss clinic, the woman said she was getting her drugs from a dentist in California that she knew from school.
Yeah.
And when they asked her who, she wouldn't say.
Of course.
You know,
right.
And,
sure.
You know, so.
Man.
But, you know, that's another thing in terms of what the PBMs and Bit Pharma is doing. I really don't know about.
So to chart this, just, you know, with hand gestures. Okay. You've got the manufacturers at the top of this vertical integration that I'm about to ask you if they're involved, but you've got the PBMs negotiating below the manufacturers with the HMOs, and the HMOs then are, you know, getting charged by the pharmacies on a schedule that nobody's allowed to know about.
But the PBMs determine.
Yeah. The PBMs determine that, and at the bottom, you've got the patients. So the piece in your articles that I have not seen, and it could just be I haven't read enough about it, is to what extent is Big Pharma, meaning the manufacturers, you know, Merck and Squibb and, you know, all of these, to what extent are they like owned by HMOs or PBMs, or are they cleanly separate from that negotiation with the PBMs?
They were. That's something. That's another thing that's happened is this vertical integration went into overdrive starting in like 2015, 2016 timeframe. They are just now trying to take
around Obamacare time period.
So that's a huge deal. Let me just wrap this up.
Yeah.
They've only taken very tentative steps into the manufacturing realm.
Okay.
Yost and others have raised warning signs about this.
Yeah, because that's more monopolistic behavior.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah. It is definitely true. And there are these, I follow a lot of these antitrust watchdog groups, and they say that a big mistake we've made around Obamacare, you know, all these Americans got health insurance who didn't have
it.
Yeah.
Right,
I think that's kind of an undisputed good. But there's this feeling that we handed this all off. We privatized it. We handed it all off to these big insurance companies, which, you know, three of the top 10 are owned by these health conglomerates, these three health conglomerates I'm talking about. Yeah. And so, and we're talking hundreds of billions of dollars. And so you've got these healthcare companies that have gotten into more and more aspects of the business because, you know, it's that's where the money is.
Yeah, right.
So the purchasing, the conglomerate, I get my head wrapped around this. So the conglomeration, and there may not be one pat answer to this, is who bought who? Or is it, you know what I mean? No, so, it's that vertical.
So like in 2018, CVS Health acquired Aetna. Sometimes they call them mergers. Sometimes they say one buys who, the other. Yeah. But it doesn't matter, does it? You know,
yeah. I mean,
so it happened in different ways in that vertical.
And that's something that's been going on.
So they
on.
Consolidated and went vertical.
And that's one thing I wanted to mention in kind of the overarching antitrust framework. Starting around 1980, there were all these laws on the books, and we just stopped enforcing them. The idea became that this is about efficiency. If companies get bigger and it results in cheaper prices for customers, we're just not going to do this.
Because that's what our constituents want.
Right.
Yeah, so therefore, we're giving them what they want.
That's also what our, you know, our big money supporters want.
Yeah. Wanted,
so
sure.
It started with Reagan, but every president since then, Democrat and Republican, went along with it until about 4 years ago, and they started enforcing some of these laws, just kind of you know, blew off the dust.
Yeah.
And so so this FTC became, you know, sort of newly aggressive. And early on, this was like a bipartisan thing. You know, Dave Yost has, under Ohio antitrust law, has a lawsuit against the Valentine Act, has a lawsuit against the PBMs. So now we're in Washington, and, you know, Donald Trump a couple of different times, like in January, December before he took office.
Before he took off, he gave the go-ahead.
Well, he criticized these, you know, pharmacy benefit managers.
Yeah, right?
But now since he's been in office, he's trying to remove the two Democratic members from the Federal Trade Commission. They're fighting that in court. They're saying it violates the FTC law from 1914.
About appointments.
About appointments.
Okay.
And at the same time, Jim Jordan, he's chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, tried to put in a measure in a spending bill that would have moved all of the FTC's responsibilities and money to the antitrust division of the Justice Department without any of its enforcement powers.
Huh.
And they have distinct enforcement powers. So that was the idea of the FTC law, was to kind of remove this from the politics a little bit. You have to, it requires that some of the commissioners be Republicans, some of them be Democrats, they're appointed to fixed terms so that, you know, president just couldn't come in and
kind of like the National Labor Relations Board.
It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah. Okay.
And
yeah.
you know,
and this was established back in 1914.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
And so there are
is when the trust busting was started.
Yeah.
Against the railroads and Standard Rail.
And then there were more laws that were passed during the Depression.
Yeah.
Like the, I think, Wright-Patman law. But so there's a lot of speculation about why this is happening. You know, So Jordan was forced to pull that measure back out, and I'm not sure exactly why.
The line in your article that intrigued me, I think it goes to this. You mentioned that, and Brett and I talked about, we were like, that almost like is a subject for another complete article.
Right.
But you mentioned in one sentence, and I could tell you couldn't explain it, but you wanted to say it
happened.
There's
so many things I can't explain.
Was that Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk recommended somehow that it was going to cost the government, the federal government, more money to do this PBM reform than just to leave it alone for now and save it for a later day. Do you have any idea how would what the 39 AGs are proposing, you know, the transparency, the flat rate handling charge, the all the pharmacies paying the same, how would that cost the federal government any money? Do you understand? I don't understand that.
Well, I'm a professional cynic, and anytime to me, government regulation isn't good or bad; it's necessary. It's never perfect. It can always be better.
Yeah.
But any...
It can be too much. It can be too little.
It can be too little. It needs to be targeted, and it constantly needs to be improved. Kind of like, you know, medical science. You always are... Got a question, you know, are we doing this right?
Well, business mutates just like germs.
Exactly.
So it's a moving target.
Exactly. Yeah. And so anytime anybody comes along and just says, regulation bad, you know, I'm reaching for my wallet because, you know, what some people think, I don't know this for a fact, is that too many super wealthy interests are, you know, stand to lose money over this.
For sure.
And so then all of a sudden somebody starts saying, oh, regulation. We gotta cut the regulatory burden. And this is a much more nuanced thing. And that's why I love talking to you guys about this.
Yeah.
We can get down
to it. It's a deep dive.
Yeah.
So the same Doge guys, right, who, and I remember this press conference with Elon Musk and President Trump where they said, the reporters said, well, does Elon get to decide whether there's an EV discount or rebate or whatever you want to call it, like a credit on your tax return? And Trump and Elon said, no, I don't get to be part of that decision. And here in the great big beautiful bill, there is no rebate anymore for the EVs. They took that out. So that was at the expense of Elon Musk. Like he lost.
Yeah,
Tesla lost a ton right there. And what I can't get here is how could saving the federal government's Medicaid budget from billions of extra cost, how could that cost more than to pass this legislation? I just don't understand why Doge recommended that be pulled out of the bill.
Remember when I talked about the pay-fors? There are, you know, some percentage of these rebates, some people call them kickbacks, are going into the federal government's bottom line.
Okay.
So, you know, that this is where these numbers become magic. You know, the overall cost of health care to the government and to society in general might go down.
You're saying Medicaid at the federal level is also getting these rebates or discounts.
And Medicare as well.
And Medicare as well.
Yeah, so CMS.
And so it's not just privates getting this money back from Big Pharma. It's also...
And in those programs, and I believe that this is true, that a majority of those rebates are going back into the government's bottom line.
I never even thought about that.
So there's they set up a guarantee of if we pay the government, we probably won't get cut out.
And in my mind,
we're probably pretty safe.
Wow.
In my mind, as an actual capitalist, that is the classic misaligned economic incentive.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Because the government's paying for it and there's no real way around that, because if you have a certain part of the population that is a poor, that they can't afford it otherwise, right, the government under Medicaid is going to supply those drugs.
Right. You know,
because the people, they can't pull their wallet out and pay for it themselves. So the government stands in their place and gets this discount and it comes back to them, or it's just at a lower price to begin with. Like you said, it could be structured a bunch of different ways.
Then there's the math.
These rebates are paid in actual dollars. So in an accounting sense, this is money flowing into the government.
Right.
So, you know,
even if a check's not cut.
They are cut. Yeah.
You're pretty sure it's not just a discounted price.
It's
an actual rebate.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah. And
so the sentence, what was the quote that they said why they wouldn't want to do it?
They said it was going to cost the federal government more money.
So putting it in that vein.
Than to leave it alone and save it for later.
That is a buttload of money coming in.
Oh, it's got to be.
That's a buttload.
It's billions. It's tens of billions, maybe even hundreds.
Which, you know, and to me, this kind of goes off sidetrack, but let's get back to it though, too. It's like everyone is so disincentivized to help us be healthy without drug intervention.
Well, that's true.
They're drug dealers.
That's true.
They're drug dealers. Professional, legitimate drug dealers.
Well, we were talking about Ozempic. Look at the attraction of that. I don't have to go to the gym. I can get a shot, and lose weight, without doing anything.
Yeah,
I mean, that's every fantasy. Bit of it,
even if it's a maintenance drug.
Every Atkins,
alternatives to hypertension or whatever.
Sure,
that maybe I can get off this hypertension maintenance drug that over time is going to really hurt my liver or kidneys, whatever.
Right.
They're not going to prescribe. There's no incentive for them to want to encourage me to be healthier. It's like, well, take this drug. I mean, I was just in a doc, and this is nothing against the doc I saw earlier this year, but some numbers were wrong and nothing health major or anything like that. But she says, well, we can prescribe that drug. And then, wait a minute, how about if I just do this next year and we'll monitor it?
Right.
It was basically me drinking more water when it came down to it.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like, I don't want to add another drug.
Change your behavior.
You know, and again, I don't think that, to me, I don't think the doctors as a whole are making us drug dependent, but at the same time, we want it. So it's an easy prescription. That's an easy fix.
Brett, look at the opioids.
Right.
The entire history of opioids. Yeah. I remember going to see my primary physician and on two occasions, the same guy. I'm sure he's a good guy. I'm sure he's a great doctor. In fact, I kept him, So, because I thought he was a great doctor. But on two different occasions, he said, are you depressed? Like out of nowhere. It's like, no, doc, actually, I'm not depressed.
You know, and I think I questioned when I was in the doc, too. It's like, I think it must be this.
Well, but he had a
You have to ask it now.
Well,
you know,
he had a fix for it, right? And then he asked me, are you in any kind of constant pain? And I knew we were going to go down the opioid trail.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know,
jeez,
they got compensated back in the good old cowboy days. Like if they wrote that opioid prescription,
that was the profit.
At the doctor level, they got money.
Oh yeah. Wow. There's an excellent book that touches on that. It's called Malcolm Gladwell wrote it called The Revenge of the Tipping Point. And it dwells heavily on how that all worked. But anyway, you're saying is definitely true. I worked with a guy who had high blood pressure, love the guy, and he would just put salt on everything.
Because he was taking medication.
He was a really funny guy. One day I looked at him, I was like, I'm not going to use his name. It's like, you know, you should be putting salt on something. And he goes, that's what the pills are for, baby.
I know, exactly.
Wow.
And I've heard that phrase before, too. Oh, my God.
Then he died of a Widowmaker heart attack, at like age 50. Yeah. But with the GLP-1 drugs, the Ozempics or whatever, one thing you got to think about is if you're quite obese, it's hard to do anything.
Right. And I've heard that, you know? I work with somebody that is doing a podcast about GLP-1s. And the story she's talking about and the people she's interviewing, there are, like you said, there's always those, there's that percentage that drug really can help you.
Yeah.
It really can, because your body's just not doing what it should do. Yeah.
And it just makes it so you don't feel as hungry.
Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah. So there are always good cases to it.
Well, guys, and Marty, you are not compelled to jump in, but please do jump. Let's talk about a couple other things.
Yeah,
way more up to speed than us about House Bill 15. So we know that there was House Bill 6 back in yonder. In the early part of the DeWine administration, and he signed off, and that started this whole First Energy reimbursement, which was truly a dirty deal. And you know, people are in prison now because, in fact, one guy committed suicide rather than going to prison.
Yeah.
Two did.
That's right.
So I have to confess, all I read in the headlines about House Bill 15, which is this supposed to be the fix for House Bill 6 that brought us the First Energy scandal, is that we're no longer going to subsidize the coal industry. Okay. I'm not sure how that solves. Where does this go here, Marty? As far as my understanding is that we need to build these nuke modules for the data centers. Like there's not enough power. And if they have to decide whether or not, say, Duke Energy or, our energy, AEP, they're going to have to like make some tough choices and start doing the California brownouts unless we build more energy. So I don't get what did House Bill 15 do?
So they, first of all, what they did was they closed the Ohio, or they stopped the subsidies to the Ohio Valley Electricity Company. That's two coal-fired plants.
Okay.
One of them's not even in Ohio.
Okay.
It's in Indiana. This was a sweetener that was built into House Bill 6, the corrupt energy bill, to get the other, the AEPs, the other power companies that weren't benefiting, like First Energy, not to oppose it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think we're talking about a big amount of generation.
Okay.
And then in House Bill 15, there are some measures that environmentalists are concerned about that would bolster generation. They completely streamline and speed up the process for the Ohio Power Siting Board to approve 50 megawatt plus plants that are on property that's already owned by the power companies. Now, because of setbacks that were built into a bill like a couple of years ago, this is where the environmentalists are concerned. You have to have like a quarter mile setback for any wind generation or solar arrays take up a lot of space. So what they say this totally does is make it so that only natural gas plants using fracked energy are going to be able to fill this need. But the whole process of opening these plants has been greatly streamlined under House Bill 15.
Okay. All right. But it's for natural gas.
For natural gas.
And so nothing about these nuke modules like that Amazon and Google want to have in their data centers, like no help for them.
Well, I don't think it contemplates that at all. I think that there are, because House Bill 6 was almost completely focused on keeping open
two nuclear power plants
that were losing money. I don't know that anybody's really talking that much about these new nuclear generation technologies that you're referring to, which apparently are safer than these, the Davis-Bessie plant, and more efficient and
the way I hear it, sorry to interrupt, but the way I hear it is so I happen to know of a skipper of a nuclear submarine for the U.S. Navy. I'm not friends with him personally, but in his description of generating, fission, right, to run the reactor to power a nuclear sub, the same kind of compact small nuclear power plant could run a data center and not even service customers up and down the industrial park. It would just be for Amazon or Google or whoever it is. It would be their little miniature nuclear power plant servicing their data center. And then AEP and Duke don't have to brown out residential customers.
I think the expression for that is behind the meter.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like we're making our own power. You can come in, Atomic Energy Commission, where you can inspect it. Like you can determine the specifications or whatever. But we're not holding ourselves out as an energy company. We just want it for our usage.
Right. Right.
And to that point, Bezos bought Three Mile Island because the one reactor that's not damaged, he wants to recommission that to service his Amazon data centers in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I could see the likes of AEP and Duke just throwing a fit over that idea, though.
Oh, I
could. They want a piece of that.
Yeah,
they do.
Public Utilities Commission of Ohio.
But at the same time, they're bitching and moaning that they don't have enough capacity. Well, let me give you a stupid analogy.
Like, but you've probably heard of like the Amish or guys out in the country. Mm-hmm. They will build like a furnace that's separate from their building. It's out in the field. They feed it wood all winter long, and they run a pump, and it brings in hot water
thermal heat.
The floor and into baseboard, for their home, for their barns, for their animal barns, for whatever they're doing.
Yep.
So they are generating energy off the grid.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
people with solar panels on their roof.
I know of one.
This is the same. It's just scaled up.
I know of one tree preservationist company in the Columbus market that does the same thing. They had this custom made furnace.
Yeah.
That, of course, they're a lumber, tree preservation, so they've got logs, big sure. tree stuff,
right.
and it's made to drop one big thing in at a time, and it'll run for a week at a time.
So trucking companies do that with recycled diesel
exactly.
oil,
yep.
right? They drain their trucks, mm-hmm. they separate out the solids, and then they burn that stuff in overhead heaters for their their shipping warehouses.
Right, yeah. But on that scale, I could see AEPs and Duke saying, this isn't going to happen.
But at the same time, AEP and Duke are complaining
that they don't have the capacity. What a great, find a middle ground on this.
Well, I'm not going to shock you when I say that when AEP and Duke say that they don't have the capacity, they want more capacity that they can own.
Gotcha.
Right, you know? Exactly. Gotcha. That's basically what
they're
saying.
But I haven't seen them directly agitate for nuclear plants. Yeah. Like they seem afraid to take that next step. And it seems like these...
But maybe it's not in their wheelhouse. Well, in regards to understanding. I don't know.
We all know what happened with the Zimmer power plant project down in Cincinnati. Right.
Right?
It got killed because of a movie.
Because of the China syndrome? But also, I think that's, you know, and they also saw what happened to First Energy because they clung to these old school power plants,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which, by the way, were, you know, built on the same design as the Three Mile Island reactors.
Right. Yeah.
And the
reason we didn't have a Chernobyl, right, is Chernobyl had just gravel, basically, mm-hmm. underneath the floor. So the China syndrome kind of did happen in Chernobyl, mm-hmm. blew the roof off and all this spew came out, but it didn't at Three Mile Island because Battelle here in Columbus, right? They're the ones that helped establish these figures of how thick the concrete's got to be and all that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that part of it is maybe, you know, investors are shy when nuclear power comes up because of all the sunk costs that these big plants require.
Right.
But it seems to me, and I'm hardly an expert in this, that there's a conversation to be had about the smaller cell,
right.
newer technology that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, I'm willing to be convinced either way. Maybe it's not safe because we got it. We still have to figure out what to do with the fuel and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But one other thing I wanted to mention, Norm, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but apparently one of the reasons why these data center projects that were huge ones were planned for Ohio are starting to be delayed is there's new artificial intelligence coming out of China that is not nearly as energy intensive.
This deep think or whatever.
Something
they
like that.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. I read about that they may retool what their actual needs are for computing power.
Right. So I think, I don't know. I'm way out of my depth.
No,
here.
I
remember that story, them talking about that it's kind of a
And even
a
speculating.
Yeah.
Like, is it real? Is this deep, whatever it is from China, is that a real thing? Mm-hmm. Or are they playing with us?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. No,
but
no.
So we there are some people raising doubts that we're going to need as much electricity as we thought we did.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm way out of my depth. Yeah.
Well, Brett, we advertised Alcatraz and thuggery.
Yeah.
I just want to report on a sad thing from Hamilton County.
Yeah.
I don't know where this is going, but it seems like a clear case of assassination of a police officer. A father who was obviously despondent, obviously angry, ran over a deputy Hamilton County sheriff who was directing traffic for graduation ceremonies.
And you see.
And he just plowed him over.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine it was by accident. And I think you came up with an angle that there's a GoFundMe type of thing.
Yes, the Buckeye State Sheriff's Association put out a press release earlier this week. It might have been Monday or so, just soon after. The Buckeye State Sheriff's Association demands GoFundMe remove a fundraiser for a cop killer who taunted deputies at arraignment.
So the guy who drove the car into the deputy sheriff, he is the father of a young man that was in a shootout with the Cincinnati Police Department, and he was killed in the shootout.
Right, exactly.
And so the next day or maybe 2 days later, it was almost immediate, he went and killed the, I guess, the first police officer.
It looks as that way. Yeah, exactly. So the association's asking GoFundMe to take that thing down.
Well, in this situation, no. Well, we've talked about this trend a little bit of like the Luigi Mangione thing in New York, mm-hmm. where the United Healthcare guy was assassinated, right? And there seems to be a fan club for Luigi Mangione. Like there it's super be, weird
yeah, that they understand the plight, I guess you could say, but it's to the nth degree though that they're willing to be a part of the club.
I know people who knew the United Health executive who died. The guy had two teenage sons. You're not saw, and I understand that people are upset about United Health.
Well, we just talked about PBMs.
Exactly.
And United Health is notorious for denying coverage, denying claims. You're not going to solve that with a gun. You're just
right.
Not.
No.
And like exactly. Where, how low have we sunk, right?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, but there is this weird thing in American mentality. Like back in the Bonnie and Clyde days, there were people who were like, rah, rah, go rob the banks. They were killing people. They were killing people.
It's John Dillinger. Real life drama that they wanted to follow.
And people are like, go get the bank. Go get the bank people.
Not for nothing. It was the Depression. And people,
correct.
You know.
Yeah. Correct.
And I think that
it to the man. Stick it to anybody you can. You bet.
The other thing is where to put such criminals. Yeah. And I don't know if he's serious. Or it's almost like the 51st state in Canada. Yeah. I think almost the Trump administration, in some ways, is an Andrew Dice Clay concert. it's almost like he throws things out to misdirect people, or he's just flat funny and he thinks it's a stand-up thing, but it really agitates people. And I get that. The Canadian Prime Minister yesterday said, actually, no, we don't want to be a state. And it shouldn't have had to come to that. I mean, but he floated out the idea that reopening Alcatraz after, I think it's 62 years ago, it was shut down by the original Robert F. Mm-hmm. Kennedy when he was Attorney General of the United States. Mm-hmm. And it was over the cost of operation.
Correct.
And we just, like, we're in a DOGE phase here.
Yeah, that's what's made me scratch my head going, if you've got that kind of money to bring
reopen.
Back out. Why are you? Where was the discussion about the wall?
We need a feasibility study.
Exactly.
Which
again is another waste of money.
Well,
because it's like, I think there are better ways to. If we have that kind of cash to spend, there's probably better ways of spending.
And we already have a federal prison that's impossible to get out of. It's in Florence, Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
And another one in Gitmo.
Yeah.
There you go.
For people we never bring to the shore.
Have you ever been through Alcatraz as a tour?
Yes.
Isn't it amazing?
It is amazing.
It truly really is.
And when you see, even in like, what is it, Mansfield, there's mm-hmm. that, you know,
yeah.
Shawshank Redemption movie prison, the Mansfield prison, whatever it was called. Like with all the paint peeling and everything, like you just can't imagine bringing that back.
Right.
I can't.
That's my point.
Yeah.
When you're going, and when my wife and I went through that, that's been 20 years-ish ago. So and then it was, you know, of course, you know, they're trying to keep it up as much as they can, but same time. So, yeah. So, hey, Marty, thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
what are you working on? What are you working on?
Well, today I am getting confirmation about five more pharmacies closing in southeastern Ohio. So I'm kind of following up on that. Mm. Damage done. I guess this is something we didn't address. So remember the Change Healthcare thing from last year when somebody stole or they got hacked and they were shut down for like a week and held hostage? United Health owns Change Healthcare and they reconciled a bunch of claims. And anyway, this forced this company to not be able to fill any scripts for almost an entire week. And
oh, wow. Okay. I don't remember that.
Forcing them to pull out of Ohio.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's for as many jobs as we're trying to save through Jobs Ohio, whatever the case might be. You would think with all, as we talked about, the pharmaceutical deserts that are going on, that the state of Ohio could at least short term help keep them open until we figure this out. I'm you know, the audience knows, okay, Brett, you've always talked about corporate welfare. What are you doing talking about that? But at the same time, we're also talking about the health of Buckeyes, of Ohio State, of Ohio residents.
Right.
And it's, so it's a little different in that, in my mind.
Well, it impacts the overall economy. If
right.
people are sick, they're not working.
They're not working.
The Ohio Board of Pharmacy is taking this very seriously.
Okay.
They launched a, it's a pharmacy desert tool in Ohio late last year. And they're using that. One of the things they're trying to experiment with until the situation can be stabilized is doing pharmacy telehealth, which is not the best alternative, but at least, because one way where I think we who are healthy and live in cities don't appreciate what pharmacy is, for a lot of people, say in Wellston, Ohio, that's your, a lot of people's only chance to go talk to a healthcare professional about their, you know, their diabetes, their hypertension.
Or medications that may not work well together, and they're maybe trying to do a natural way, and that natural way counterbalances. I mean, for example, I know that I'm on maintenance drug for hypertension, but I also know that I cannot, with that, at least that strain of drug, I should not and don't eat grapefruit. It counterbalances the benefits of that. Simple as that.
Who knew, though? I mean, you know,
grapefruit's
supposed to be this super healthy thing
to eat. But there are certain foods that you just can't eat when you take certain medications, or a blood thinner. You've got to watch what you do with it on a maintenance kind of realm. So,
and,
yeah.
you know, and the docs will tell you this. Your pharmacist knows more about what those drugs do than they do.
Exactly. So you're kind of it's a faux doctor kind of feel when you go see your pharmacist.
Right.
But you're right. Your pharmacist probably knows more about you than your doc does.
You know,
to a certain degree. You spend more time in front of a pharmacist when you go get your drugs filled than you do the doc.
And they know how those drugs interact. You know, the contraindications is what they call it, you know, and so that's...
Yeah.
And that's important too, because, you know, pharmacies are small town, small businesses,
yes,
you know,
they are.
And that's kind of a gauge of how well Main Street is doing, whether they're able to stay in business.
Right. And I think, often an essential part of that community.
Right.
Essential. Like, you know, I mean, if you need your prescription filled and it's a choice of driving a couple hundred miles, you know, or 50 miles or whatever it is out in the middle of, you know, if you're in North Dakota or something, or Ohio, right?
Yeah.
You may decide to forego your medication and actually contribute to a spiral in your health.
Yes.
By not getting, by deciding it's too inconvenient.
Right.
I'm not going to take my heart medicine. It's too much of a hassle.
Or too much cost or whatever.
For a lot of these people, they don't have a car.
Yeah,
They can't drive.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so you're dependent on...
Yeah, they're elderly.
You're dependent on your neighbor to take you. Yeah. And when it was...
A short Uber or whatever. Yeah.
When it was a mile into town, that was one thing, but now it's 24 miles across, you know, winding
country
roads.
You're on one side of the county and the pharmacy's on the other side of the county. Exactly, yeah. So they can, listeners can catch your articles on Ohio Capital Journal.
Which is a free site, right?
Yeah, exactly. So talk, you know,
so
we
wonderful journalism there. Like,
exactly.
Straight up the middle.
Right.
It's not partisan. That's why we have Marty come in.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because it's, he just gives us facts and explains things in a way that is non-confrontational.
Right,
and I so appreciate that. Yep. That's what journalism used to be, and it still exists at the Capital Journal.
Yes. Well, I'm really grateful to be able to have these kinds of discussions.
Yeah.
I think that we need a lot more of this in this country.
We do. Yeah.
I think people agree on, once you can get all the fog out of the way, we agree on a whole lot more than we disagree on.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And guys, thanks for putting up with my little, so I'm not wearing Depends, but they ought to come out with Depends for podcasters.
The common sense Ohio Depends.
Listen, my kidneys couldn't take it any longer. Too much coffee.
Exactly. Yeah. I want to thank Harper Plus CPA, Harper CPA Plus, excuse me, HarperCPAPlus.com for sponsoring the episode. Happy Mother's Day. It's Mother's Day week. So, you know, if you, any mother that's touched your life, if your mother's still around, if not, pray for them. And if they are, make sure you show some love.
For sure.
And we'll be back next week. Thanks.